Welcome to the Reiki Show, hosted by Reiki authors Bronwyn and Fran Steiner, founders of the International House of Reiki. Find out more at www.reiki.net.au.
Hi, my name is Franz, and today we have with us Jiro Sensei. Jiro Sensei is a Tendai priest who lives in Queensland, Australia. He has a varied past which had always centered around Japanese ways, arts and religions. From the age of 7, he has studied various Japanese martial arts, including judo, karate and aikido. In Japan, he studied with Takamusi Aiki, with one of Japanese highest-ranked Shinto priests and Aiki senseis. We're sure that today Jiro Sensei will be able to help us understand the Japanese ways in greater depth and therefore help us to understand ourselves in relation to the Japanese art of Reiki. Welcome, Jiro Sensei.
Hi, thank you. Good evening.
Can you maybe explain a little bit about the Aiki principles?
Okay. First of all, I think the concept of Aiki is nothing new. It became mostly popular when Ueshiba Sensei opened it in about 1948, and he termed it Aikido. Basically, it really means to be in harmony with the way of the spirit. And Ueshiba Sensei was a martial artist, and what he did, he explored the path of Aiki through his martial arts, which he then termed Aikido. It's about balance, it's about blending, and really it's about being at one with your partner, with yourself, and just about everything really.
In Aiki as well, you use a lot the hara center.
Yeah.
Why is the uses of the hara center so important?
I think in martial arts in general, your Japanese martial arts in general, the hara is very, very important, because really, that's, how can we say that, this is your driving force. Everything emanates from your hara. So it's a concept that the Japanese really took to very, very high levels. Quite often you hear in Japanese martial arts, it's not about strength, it's about using your center. And I think Aiki really highlights that. It's about how you use your center, how you use that that energy that's flying around your body, basically to harmonize your mind, your body, and your spirit.
The hara center as well, I mean, you've studied Tendai Buddhism. Yep. And Shintoism. Mm. Do they use the hara center in those practices as well?
Oh, absolutely. It all really centers around hara. As I say, your hara is the driving point. It's the place where the energy disperses around the body. And also, really, I think it's that point that harmonizes really the whole of everything. Once you've got hara, once you've really got your center, then really there is no division between yourself, your partner, and your nature, the universe, the whole thing. It's that important.
So what you're saying as well, that when we work with the hara center, we can really connect to a space of oneness.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's like, for example, in your own Reiki, you find that it's not you doing the application. It's really, if you like, standing aside and allowing that power to actually come through. It's the same with Aiki.
Yeah. In the system of Reiki as well, we use kind of kotodamas.
Uh-huh, kotodama, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the concept of kotodamas?
Yeah, kotodama basically means jeweled words. And in Japanese language, we have these different sounds that affect different aspects of the body. And kotodama can be looked on at many different levels. At one level, you're focusing on maybe the rhythm and the words, perhaps. You're really focusing, what do these words mean? But ultimately, again, the idea is that as you let go of yourself, it's about sound and it's about the vibration. And really, for example, in Tendai and all Buddhist schools, we have the dharani. And these dharani really are not about the words, it's about sound. And you'll notice, for example, the Tibetan monks, they use these very, very deep, deep-rooted sounds that really come so far from within them. really, it's, again, it's that universe sound emanating out into the physical world.
So it's really to connect to the universal sound and letting that resonate through your own being.
Absolutely, because especially when you look at yourselves, or when we look at ourselves in terms of our physical body, you know, we are nothing but a collection of atoms that are vibrating at different levels. So that when we hit the right levels, or hit the right sounds, for example, and when they're long sounds, short sounds, high sounds, deep sounds, they actually override the body. It's almost like the whole thing completely melds. Again, it's this harmonious thing, melding from one thing into the other.
For people who are using the Kotodama within the system of Reiki, I think it's a very new way of teaching. It's not really often being taught in the system of Reiki. It's not so as much a new way of teaching, but it's actually a more traditional kind of way of teaching, but it's only reasonably new applied within a Western kind of system of Reiki.
Yeah.
Can you maybe give them a little tip about how to work with the Kotodama?
I think the first thing is if you're using the Japanese, the Japanese sounds, I think, first of all, is to get the sounds right. So you've got those I, E, U, A, O, to make sure that those sounds are really correct, because they are different from an English sound. You know, so that's very, very important. And then try to focus on, for example, on the lower sounds, the R, U, for example, are the lower sounds from the abdomen. The higher sounds, for example, the heart center and the crown chakra. Bring all of that in. Because really, it's, as I said, it's not about the words, it's about generating the right kind of sound. So I think it's a case of just continuing with it. It's not something that, you know, people are going to learn like within a week or something like that. To do Kotodama really well takes years and years of practice, but we all have to start somewhere. So I think, just really the simple sounds, maybe even simple combinations of sounds.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for that. You talked about just before about that we're all atoms and energy. Often in Tendai Buddhism, the concept of form and formlessness is used.
Yep.
Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, this is an interesting one, because we need form as a kind of training tool. The whole idea, the whole philosophy is to see through form for what it is. And this, for what it is essentially empty. It's nothing. So the form itself, if you like, helps us deal with the world in which we live in on a very superficial, conventional kind of level. Because what we find is that because we take things in terms of having real value, we put our own values on top of them. And then because we become attached to them, we normally find that there are problems that follow on from that. But if we learn to see that these things within themselves are in fact formless and then therefore empty, then we can find that a lot of the problems that we experience begin to fade away, because our approach to them is changing. And in terms of martial arts and in terms of Aikido, we need basics to help the students get the right patterns, if you like. But ultimately, it's working with form, going through form, and then exiting from form. So at the end of the day, it's complete freedom. And it's the same with our practices in Tendai. We need the form, we need the focus as our connecting point, and also as our honing block, that which we work with. But ultimately, it's about freedom. I remember Gion Sensei once told me that at the end of the day, all the books, all the study that you do, you can just burn it and just throw it all away, because in the end, you'll be completely free.
In Reiki, for example, we use a lot of rituals, and to me, the ritual is the form, and then we go beyond the ritual, what is the formlessness? And then we go beyond the ritual, what is the formlessness?
That's right. It just becomes your freedom, your expression, if you like. You've used the tool, and it's become so ingrained that you actually don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
It kind of falls away, and this other thing takes over.
You both studied Tendai and Shinto.
Mm.
Did you find that there was like an overlapping in that, or were they kind of two separate entities?
Not really, because in Japanese culture, the two almost go together quite naturally anyway. When I was actually living in Japan, I found a great sense of freedom and a great sense of openness when I used to visit Shinto shrines. The difficulty is that in so many cases, it's difficult to explain. You know, the Japanese people say, oh, it's very difficult to explain. But what I found ultimately was that it is so ingrained within the Japanese psyche, if you like, that there really is no need to explain it. You just work with it. And I was really pleased to find that in Tendai, they did have something called Tendai Sanno Shinto, and it was the Shinto that Saicho, Master Saicho, ingrained into Tendai when he came back from China. So I'm really quite happy about that, and it's just a nice way of relating to everything around you. Really, it's a very simple way of combining everything.
Within Tendai and Shinto, you studied with some very traditional teachers. Can you tell us a little bit about the training? I think in our kind of Western way of thinking, we have kind of instant gratification. in more traditional Japanese styles, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, I'm not sure, but it's much more rigorous before you were set as well, you know, to really practice Koto Dharma takes years and years of practice.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. In the Koryu, or the old style of in martial arts in particular, progress is very slow because they're very, very focused on kihon basics, but also the attitude that goes with the training. It's a very kind of in-depth kind of practice, and it's normally guarded very, very carefully. So in the older styles, it's the students are chosen very, very carefully for not only their technical skill, but for their kind of character. So in terms of martial arts, a lot of the traditional martial arts, because they are so old and because they are originally came from clans and came from families, and even at that level they were very, very protected, they still are to a certain extent. So they're not only handing on technique, but they're handing on history, culture, heritage. So all of that is guarded even now in some of the older schools. And I think it's one of the things that most Westerners don't really understand. It's like, I want to learn this. Okay, if I pay you my money, will you teach me? And of course, some of the older systems will say, well, no, it's not as simple as that.
And often, too, it takes years and years of training with the particular teacher.
Well, that's right, because, again, the teacher, once you are accepted by the teacher, then really you become his disciple. And he will put in time, effort, and not only in the dojo, but outside the dojo, guiding you along, watching for those moments when the right time comes, when he can actually pass something on to you, tell you something in the right space, in the right time, at the right moment.
Yeah. One of the people, I'm not sure if you worked with this sensei, but on your website you have a quote from Genshin Fujinami Ajari.
Oh, yeah.
And it states, human beings are not special. There are no special things.
Yes.
When I read that, it just, it's such a beautiful quote. Maybe you'd like to explain a little bit more. Why did you put it on your website?
I think it was a way of just a kind of seed to get people thinking. Because, again, a lot of the problems that we have and we experience are based upon how we look at ourselves and how we look at other people. And we grade people in terms of good, nice, or special, or not special. And we do this. We make these choices. And we also make these choices about ourselves. What Fujinami Ajari was saying was that really, when you come right down to it, again, you see through that. In fact, there are no special people. There is no one special, really, because we're all basically the same in terms of having no substance of our own. We are a combination of other things, and that's what he means. Now, that doesn't mean to say, for example, with our families, that we don't love our families and things like this. But again, it's that same thing of seeing through what it really is. And I think that when we do that, when we actually see inside and recognize that there is no difference between, for example, our husbands, our wives, our children, famous people, there is no difference at all. Deep down, we're all the same. And that's what he means.
So in one way, that comes back to the oneness concept again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a very, very important thing. And this is what the Buddha was constantly saying. And of course, this is one of the key or the cornerstones of Tendai, that everything, all is one in its emptiness, if you like.
We've talked now a little bit about the traditional practices within Japan. Before you make a little statement about the crown chakra. Nowadays, a lot of people say, the chakra system was practiced in Japan.
Yeah.
To my understanding and study in Japan itself, I've never really come across it. Could you maybe explain a little bit how that was in your kind of teachings?
It's just that these various energy points just on our body, just focusing on these different areas. And as I say, the most important ones for me, anyway, is this hara.
Yeah.
Because I do see that as the distribution point, which feeds the whole body, generates its power right through the body. And once we generate that power from the hara, we can actually, if you like, light up these different centers within the body, like the heart center, for example, coming up to the third eye. So it's all, again, this idea of stripping away the physical aspect, if you like. And in our Aikido, or in Aiki anyway, this is very, very important, that when you are doing certain techniques, your hand, you generate your ki into your hands. And when you meet with your partner, for example, you cease to be yourself and your partner. It's these two energy sources mixing together. It's called the musuba, ki musuba.
You just said before about the hara center, the heart, and the third eye, or often for myself, I call it the mind center.
Yeah.
In Japanese Reiki, we often work with the earth and heaven elements. I know that Ushiba Sensei always used to work with the heaven and earth elements as well, or fire and water.
Yeah.
Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that?
I think what Ushiba Sensei was saying, again, is this idea of unity. He often spoke about earth energy. He spoke about Ten no ki, Chi no ki, the earth energy, the heaven energy, and basically man was the union between these two. So again, it just comes back to this idea of melding everything together. And this is, I think, for him, this was his real big focus about this total integration. And in fact, I seem to remember that just before he died, one of his statements was something along the lines of that, as I look back, I see that no one has been following me. And, of course, I was thinking, well, you've got a lot of students all around the world following you. But, what he really meant was, in the spirit that he meant, his real message, what he was really trying to say.
So, really, they applied more or less the physical aspect of it, but not really the spiritual side of it.
Well, that's right. I mean, but that's not to take anything away from the physical side. I mean, a lot of people do get wonderful enjoyment out of doing Aikido. But Ueshiba Sensei was a deeply religious man. He was a follower of the Omotokyo Shinto sect, and he was all his life. But for him, it was the total aspect of being at one with your partner. And also, he also said something along the lines of, whoever fights with me must break the unity of the universe. And at the time, I didn't really understand that. But, I mean, now I do. And again, he's saying that because he had become so integrated that really there was no difference between him and everything.
Yeah.
And this was the message that he was constantly trying to impress upon his students, because that's what he wanted. He spoke about unifying the world through Aiki. And, I mean, that's a great thing. And that's a great thing. And I think that's why, for me, I see so many possibilities within Tendai for that. Tendai has these beautiful teachings, and the more I study Tendai, the more Aiki seems to just blend in, or one blends into the other.
As you've been practicing a lot of Japanese systems, can you maybe give a little hint for practitioners who practice a Japanese system to help them on their path?
Yes, I think that if you're practicing a Japanese system, and in particular, if you're practicing a Japanese system with a Japanese sensei, and especially if perhaps it's an older system, I think one of the key aspects is to show willingness. To show willingness to listen, showing willingness to participate, showing willingness to simply be guided. Irrespective of what we might know in terms of technique or whatever, all of that has to be put aside so that the sensei can almost, in a sense, break you down in order to remold you. And I think when we understand that what the sensei is trying to teach you, in most cases, is so much, much more than technique, so much, much more than words. It's this feeling, kanji, this feeling that he's trying to generate, trying to release within you the best.
To close off this interview, within the system of Reiki, we have in level 3, we work towards something, what is called the Great Bright Light. In Tendai, there is a movement, what is called Light Up a Corner of Your World.
Ah, Ichigo wo terasu, yeah.
It just sounds, it's a beautiful thing. What is this movement about?
Again, it comes down to really expressing Dharma. Wherever you are, whatever you're learning, share it. Doesn't matter. We don't have to be great teachers. We don't have to be high up. Whatever we know, share it. Because basically, Dharma is for everybody, and it's a great opportunity. Even be in a small way to say there's a different way to live your life. It doesn't have to be like this. A lot of your problems that you're experiencing can be turned around simply by looking at life in a particular way. And so that's what it means. And of course, when you look at a lot of the great traditions, I think it was Jesus who said something along the lines of nobody lights a lamp and keeps it under a table. It's the same thing. It's when your spirit is developing, when your knowledge is growing, it's for other people. You're walking this path to set yourself free, but ultimately for others as well. So wherever you are, wherever you happen to be, if there's an opportunity to maybe point somebody in the right direction, well, we do. Well, I do. Yes.
Thank you so much for this interesting interview, Jiro Sensei.
Thank you.
I've learned quite a bit about it, and I hope our listeners will all pick something interesting from this interview as well.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.